Good morning and welcome back to Ask the Experts on Talk Radio 1190, where every Saturday we interview DFW's top experts in the areas of legal, health, home improvement, and financial. And from Texas divorce lawyers, I have Julie Johnson and Robin Ziegen with us. Thank you for joining us today, ladies.
Thank you for having us.
Now, real quick, can you tell everybody a little background, a little bit about yourselves, how you got involved in this field, how long you've been doing it, all that good stuff?
Well, this is my 21st year of practicing law, and I had done some family law over the years, but I really decided to go full-time into family law after I had gone through my own divorce.
And how long have you been practicing now?
This is my 21st year.
21st year, so you are not a lightweight. You've been doing this for a long time. You know your stuff.
I know what I'm doing.
How about you, Julie?
I've been practicing for 25 years and have an extensive trial history and practice here in Dallas, and love working with Robin on these family law cases. We really enjoy helping people transition and make good choices during this difficult time.
And the topic du jour, so to speak, today is child custody. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. Sounds good. Let's dive right into it. I hear people talk about custody of children. What is the difference between conservatorship and custody?
Well, basically, they're the same thing. The legal term is conservatorship, but you will often hear people refer to custody, and it just is referring to the same thing, who has the primary rights to a child or who has some of the parenting rights to a child.
And conservatorship is the legal term for what most people would refer to as custody.
That's correct.
And so basically, they're the same thing at the end of the day.
That's right.
It's just, you know, tomato, tomato, so to speak. Is there a presumption that, I mean, I would think in most cases there's a presumption that the mother should be the primary parent.
But there is not. And so there's hope for the dads in the world out there. You know, there is no, the law has no preference for one parent over the other. Both parents have an equal opportunity to have access to their children and to present the case. The standard is what's in the best interest of the child, and that's what we look to.
And I think most people assume on a general scale that there really is a preference, in that in most of these cases, people will just side with the mother no matter what. But you're telling me that's not the case. There is no preference.
There's not a bias in the law, no.
And if one parent can provide a better residence and a life for the child, does that parent become the primary parent, or that the children, is it because they provide more stability and opportunity?
No, just because you have more money doesn't mean that
that's exactly what I was asking.
Doesn't mean you're a better parent. And so that's what child support's for. You know, the courts can order the child, the parent that has more money, to help pay monies to the parent that doesn't, so that the child or the children can have, you know, equal access to both of them. So money can't buy you love, and it can't buy your kids. And so that's how it is.
So your fiscal stability does not necessarily dictate the quality of life for your child.
Not automatically on its face. I mean, obviously, it can have some impact. You know, if you're homeless and if you're unable to provide basic shelter, you know, and food and clothing, the basic necessities for your kids, well, that's going to absolutely have an impact. Just on the general principle, if both parents can, you know, each provide, you know, safe shelter, safe environment, then their economic divide is not appropriate.
It doesn't really matter.
No, they both get to love their kids.
And what is the difference between a joint managing conservator and a sole managing conservator?
Well, joint managing conservatorship means that each parent has the right to make decisions with regard to the child. Sole managing conservatorship means that one parent makes the decisions with regard to the child. There are variations between these, and not every joint managing conservatorship looks like the next joint managing conservatorship. There are a number of different rights that the law provides for joint managing conservatorship, and those rights might be independently exercised. They might be shared, and the parents have to agree before a decision is made, or one parent may have the right to make one decision, and a different parent may have a right to make another decision. Those rights are the right to establish the primary residence of the child, the right to consent to medical, dental, and surgical treatment involving invasive procedures of the child, the right to consent to psychological and psychiatric treatment of the child, the right to receive and give receipt for periodic payments for the support of the child, and to hold or disperse those funds for the benefit of the child, The right to represent the child in legal action or to make decisions of substantial legal significance concerning the child. The right to consent to underage marriage or enlistment in the armed forces while the child is still underage. The right to make decisions concerning the child's education and the right to the services and earnings of the child. And the right to act as an agent for the child if the child's estate is requiring an action to be filed.
Now, it sounds like from that list and those rights that the sole conservator really is holding all the cards. I mean, I can't think of any other rights that could possibly be in question. So you pretty much have full control.
That's correct. And sole conservatorships work well whenever we have only one parent that has been primarily involved in making decisions for the child and should continue doing so. And you have to keep in mind, joint managing conservatorship does not mean that a parent has the child 50% of the time. And sole managing conservatorship does not mean that the other parent doesn't get to visit with the child. It has nothing to do with the time you spend with the child, but the right to make these legal decisions.
Are there ever instances where maybe a previously absent parent returns and wants to in some way challenge the sole conservator for some custody rights, something like that?
Happens all the time. All of these decisions with regard to children are modifiable. And should there ever be a substantial and material change in circumstances, then a parent can bring it back before the court and ask the court to look at it again and decide what's appropriate now.
So you could get some kind of maybe minimal visitation rights, but you're not taking anything out of the hands of the sole conservator.
Well, you may even get substantial visitation rights. I mean, there are times where we have a sole conservator, which is the person who makes all these 9 different legal decisions for the child, but both parents have the children an equal amount of time. It has nothing to do with actual possession time with the child, but just the right to make the legal decisions.
And if the conservatorship isn't challenged such as that, and there is a case of joint managing conservatorship, does that mean that it's kind of a 50-50 split between the parents, or can it be any variation?
It can be any variation. You could have a joint managing conservatorship and have a parent never visit with the child, but still retains the right to make some decisions with regard to the child.
And what do you think, Julie, what do you think is generally presumed when it comes to joint conservatorship management?
Well, I think that the presumption is that what we see that happens in practice is both parents will have the right to make decisions and both parents will have equal time. I mean, that's the kind of the true joint model, but it certainly doesn't have to be that way. So, for example, if your son is with you and they are at football practice and they get hurt, you have the right to take them to the doctor because they're in your possession. And likewise, your spouse would have that same right because they're in their possession, or you have the right to make decisions on their behalf in a joint way when you both go through the list. So one of the things that's very common in divorces is navigating and negotiating who has the right to make these decisions. And one of the biggest kickers is who gets to decide where they go to school.
Right. No, I could see where that would be a big one. I'm sure that comes up all the time. How do you actually determine who has custody of the child?
Well, the court looks at a number of circumstances. You have to remember, whenever the court's making a decision with child custody, the court is not concerned with being fair to both parents. What the court is concerned about is the child.
So they're looking strictly into what's in the best interest for the child.
That's correct. They step into the shoes of the child and they try to figure out what would be best for that child. And there are a number of factors that the court will consider. If the child is 12 years old or older, then the court may listen to the desires of the child. That does not mean the child gets to decide who they live with, but that they will listen to what the preferences of the child are and why the child has those preferences. They'll look at the child's emotional and physical needs now and in the future, any emotional or physical danger to the child now and in the future, the parental abilities of the individual seeking primary possession, the programs available to assist these individuals to promote the child's best interest, the plans for the child by those seeking primary custody, the stability of the home or proposed placement, and the acts or omissions of a parent that indicate that the existing parent-child relationship is not a proper one, and any excuse for the acts or omissions that that parent may have done.
Now, I have to say, the one on there that caught me off guard that I did not expect was the very first one, when I think a lot of people fail to take into consideration, is the actual desires of the child. You get so caught up in the adults in the situation that you completely forget that that's something you have to take into account, what the child thinks about the whole situation, you know, the whole thing.
That's correct. I mean, I've dealt with a number of teenagers that have very strong opinions about who they want to be with, and I'm always surprised at how much thought The children have actually given it. Their reasons can be very, very compelling as to who they just maybe get along with or who they feel like is always there for them when they need someone.
Sure. No, I think that's very refreshing to hear almost that's something that they factor in. I'm glad that was on the list. Another term I've heard in connection to child custody before is a social study. Julie, can you tell us what that is exactly?
Well, absolutely. A social study is where, you know, maybe there's some history of violence or maybe one of the parents is concerned over the environment by which the parent is living, the other parent might be living, and they can request that the court order a social study. And that is where a private agency, a person who's certified to be able to conduct these studies, will go into the home and inspect it, photograph it, interview the parties that are living there, look at the, make sure it's age appropriate, it's a safe environment. And then they will make a recommendation to the court based on that social study as to possession.
So this really is essential in determining the quality of life. It's the best way to really get a firsthand picture of what you're looking at.
Well, it's a way to determine if that is a safe environment for the kids to live in. If there has been histories of family violence or something like that, then the court and the social study, they're going to get square in the middle of that and make sure that that's a safe environment before a child's allowed to go back.
Well, we're up against our first break, but before we go, I want to make sure people can get in touch with you and find out more about Texas Divorce Lawyer, and if they have any child custody issues, you can go to your website at thetexasdivorcelawyer.com, and the telephone number is 214-290-8001. We'll be right back after this short break on 1190. You're listening to Ask the Experts. Back on Ask the Experts on Talk Radio 1190. I am your host, Kevin Ebeling. I am joined in studio with Julie Johnson and Robin Zeegan from the Texas Divorce Lawyer, and we're talking about child custody a little bit today. Thank you for being here, ladies. It's always a pleasure to see you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for having us.
No problem. It is my pleasure. Before the break, we were talking about just a little bit various forms of conservatorship, joint conservatorship, those kind of things. And a term I really wanted to ask you guys about that I'm sure our listeners have heard and are maybe not entirely sure what it is a standard possession order. Can you tell me about that, Robin?
Sure. This is a possession order that has to do with when somebody has the child, when they have possession and access to the child. And it's provided for in the family code. Essentially, it means that the non-custodial parent, the parent who does not have the child most of the time, has possession of the child during the school year on every Thursday night from 6 to 8. They can go catch a movie, have dinner, spend some time together. And then the first, third, and fifth weekends from Friday at 6 to Sunday at 6. Additionally, that parent gets 30 days in the summer, and the parents alternate the important holidays. There's also a standard expanded possession order, which we're seeing a lot more frequently. And this is where the pickup time, instead of being 6 o'clock at night, is when the child gets out of school or daycare. And the child's kept overnight on the Thursday night visitations each week and returned back to school or daycare on Friday morning. Same thing with the weekends. The child is picked up on Friday when the school or daycare lets out and returned to school on Monday. So it's a little bit more extensive visitation time.
So I think the term in general, possession order, sounds slightly more aggressive than it actually is, because you're really just talking about visitation, essentially.
Right, where the child is, which parent they're seeing.
Right. Let's see. Julie, I had a question for you. I wanted to know, what are the most common parenting plans, I guess would be the best way to say it.
Well, so at the end of the day, people can agree to whatever possession schedule they want to, as long as both parties agree. And then if they can't, then as Robin was just discussing, you'll get one of these, the standard or the expanded standard, which is kind of a statutory program. But they're very common things that parties can agree to. One is what we call the 2-2-5 plan. And I personally think this is awesome. It basically, one parent has the kids on Mondays and Tuesdays. The second parent has the kids on Wednesdays and Thursdays, and then they alternate weekends. So
that actually does seem like a really well-rounded way that I think everybody could be happy.
You know, it is great. And one of the things that's the best thing about that is that you don't have to negotiate. If you have Mondays and Tuesdays and they're your days, you are in charge of those days. You don't have to coordinate with your spouse of, hey, should we put them in scouts or should I put them in dance class? Because then the next week they have to go do that. You know, you can, and you're not also.
It's not ironclad. You can adjust it.
And you're also not hauling the scout activities, the scout outfit back and forth. Kind of have your days. And then I think too, for the kids, they get into a routine where they know every Wednesday is going to be the same day. Every Thursday is the same. And kids crave routine and consistency. But another plan that people do is the week on, week off. So every week, you know, they're with one or with another. And that certainly has some benefits in that you get a longer period of time. You can establish kind of a rhythm, especially if a parent has work schedules where they have to travel. It provides the opportunity for them to travel during their off week and that kind of thing. So work schedules play a huge role in determining which plan is best. But the 225 is a great one.
And what happens if, say, the parents can't agree on the 225 plan? Where do you go from there?
You go back to the standard, the way Robin was just discussing it. That's the default position unless the parties can agree on something else.
So you go back to the standard possession order.
That's right.
And can a child, I'm not sure, this may seem like a dumb question, but, you know, I'm the layman, you guys are the experts. That's kind of what we do here. Can a child refuse to see the parent? Is it in any way up to the child at all?
Well, at 17, children are considered adults, and the court can no longer make them visit with a parent. But, you know, your 12-year-old, you need to encourage them to go and visit. They need to you need to do everything actively possible on your end to make sure that visitation occurs. Now, some of the courts are following what's called the Henderson Rule, and that means at age 15, they're actually allowing the children to make a decision.
That seems like kind of a dangerous age to put that in the hands of the child because, you know, you can be a little uneven around 15.
You can through all those teenage years.
That's a good point, actually. I think mine lasted until I was 27.
Right. But I think, you know, the thing that you find is, especially when it's weekend visitation, whenever the kids get in their teenage years, a lot of times they don't want to leave their friends. It has nothing to do with
absolutely
the parent. And so, again, like I said, you need to do everything you can to encourage the visitation because it's always important to have a child have more people on this planet that love and care for them
sure
than not. I think it's always important to look at it from that standpoint. And the people that look at it that way and really try to encourage the child to have ongoing relationships with both parents end up with an easier time all the way around. It's beneficial to everybody to do it that way.
So yeah, you want them to have consistency and routine, but if that routine is blowing off their parents to go hang out with their friends every weekend, that's probably not the best for everybody involved.
Probably not the best. And so, you know, I think it's important to kind of balance everything. And you know, with teenagers, balance is important. I mean, that's something you have to do
absolutely
whether you're divorced or not. But I do think that those people who can, and I mean certainly not every situation can, but those who can and encourage the children to visit with both and do whatever they can to make that possible end up with a better relationship all the way around.
Absolutely. And no matter where you are anywhere, if you have a child who's under 15 years of age, just because they cannot in any way refuse to see the parent, it's pretty much too bad.
Well, that's yes and no. The courts that are following the Henderson Rule will allow a child at 15 to make that decision, but that will be entered right into the decree that the child has the right to make that decision. It's not something that the child just goes along and becomes 15 and decides
right
to start following that rule.
Yeah, okay, good to know. As far as permanent residence goes, at what age can the child decide which parent they want to live with?
Well, it kind of really dovetails to what we were just talking about. You know, as child gets older, they have more options with respect to custody and visitation. But, you know, at 12 is kind of a time when the courts may or may not interview children to get their input. But again, they can state the preference, but it's really the judge's call.
If the parent, say the parents each have 50-50 of the time, is there also child support that one party has to pay?
It depends. There might be. Sometimes the court will calculate what each parent would owe the other parent and then just have the parent that would owe more pay it to the other parent. Sometimes we have people that are more affluent and can pay for more of the activities for the child, and that may be handled in the decree. Then we also have some people who work very, very well together and set up a joint banking account, and both contribute an amount of money. It may or may not be the same amount of money each into the account, and then those funds are used for the child's activities and care.
Are there instances where you can come to some sort of a settlement or agreement between the two parents regarding child support payments?
Absolutely. I would say probably 99% of cases, actually come to agreements.
And if that happens, is that deal sort of legally binding, or are they in any way still obligated by law to pay a certain percentage or amount?
It is legally binding as long as it's in the best interest of the child. So if we have something where somebody is agreeing to have no child support and they clearly need it, and it would clearly be in the best interest of the child to get it, the court may not approve that agreement. But what we do is we put it in a decree or in a temporary orders, depending on where we are in the process, and then the court looks at it, and if the court orders it, it is then an order of the court.
Now, we're just about out of time, so I have to take a little bit of a darker turn real quick. It's a little more somber than what we've been discussing, but I have to do it. It's absolutely essential to what we're talking about today. Julie, can you tell us, if there has been family violence, does this affect who gets conservatorship of the children?
Absolutely. There is a presumption that the joint managing conservator is in the best interest of the child. However, that goes out the window when there's been a finding of family violence. And that the best interest will be with the nonviolent parent. You know, the courts will not put children in harm's way. And so if you have a parent that can't control themselves and likes to beat their kids, then they're going to get restricted from those kids. Absolutely.
So if there's been family violence, will it ever happen that the court may still order visitation to the child who's, or to the parent rather, who's committed the offense?
They can order visitation, but it may be supervised. And that was probably the most likely outcome.
Yeah.
You know, again, you know, we want to encourage the parent-child relationship, but we're not going to put children in harm's way. And we're certainly not going to put them in a situation where they could be physically or sexually abused by a parent. And so that will be the child's safety trumps everything else.
All right. I'm going to ask this one to both of you because we only have about 2 minutes left. So in about 120 seconds, can you explain to me whether or not the court can keep a parent from moving, say, out of city, out of state, anything like that?
No, the court cannot keep you from moving. What the court can do is keep the child from moving. And sometimes they will keep a child here and not let them leave. And the parent has to make a decision whether they want to move or not. But generally speaking, if it is in the best interest of the child to move, and the parent is able to make a good case of that, the court will allow the move sometimes.
So they will actually look back and say, maybe there's a possibility that it's better for the child to move.
Right. Better job, better money coming in, better opportunities where they're going, so forth.
And do you have to start from scratch, kind of start all over again when it comes to ironing out visitation and stuff once you move?
You can, just simply because distance makes those things not work as well. So we have to sometimes be a little bit more creative.
All right. Well, that's just about all the time we have, but I want to make sure, as always, that people can find out as much as they possibly need. If they have any questions about child custody, you can reach out to Julie or Robin at The Texas Divorce Lawyer. The website is thetexasdivorcelawyer.com. And I have their telephone number right here. It is 214-290-8001. That's 214-290-8001. As always, it has been absolutely fantastic having you guys in the studio today. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kevin. It's great to be here.
Thanks for being here. That's all the time we have for this week. We'll see you next Saturday on Ask the Experts on Talk Radio 1190.